Now, if you are awake at all, you'll notice that Jesus refers to the story about Moses and the snake in the gospel reading. Did you get the connection today? Now, this shouldn't surprise us, I think. After all, Jesus was a devout and faithful Jewish boy from a devout Jewish family, and he would have learned all these Bible stories in Sabbath school. And this snake story is pretty weird, huh? This is the kind of story that once you hear it, it will stick with you. It's hard to forget. And as Jesus tells people stories about the way that God delivers us, the ways that God frees us and heals us, he recalls this story about the snake from the period of Israel's wandering in the wilderness. They too had been delivered by God from Egypt, and they too needed healing from those terrible, horrifying snakes. So I invite you to listen to both these stories from the Old Testament and the New as a way of becoming better storytellers ourselves. Now, you might think about our story from Numbers, our Old Testament story, as something like travel literature. You know, you've probably read some travel literature where someone takes a trip, goes on an adventure, does something exciting, and then writes about it so we can experience it through their eyes. The title of the book doesn't really work. Numbers is the title of the book. It got the name Numbers because when you read the whole thing, you'll find out that there's a census. There's a number taking in the beginning, and there's another census much later in the book. So it got named Numbers, but that's not a very good title. Our Jewish friends have not used that title. They have always referred to this writing by a phrase that comes from the first sentence. They call it in the wilderness. In the wilderness. And that's a much more descriptive, much more accurate title of what's going on. The whole thing is a travel story. This In the Wilderness story picks up after the dramatic deliverance of the people from Egypt. And it comes to an end before the dramatic story of the conquest of the Promised Land. So the whole thing, it's all wandering. And this is an odd story we read today, but there are lots of odd stories in this In the Wilderness story. I'm surprised we don't read it more often because most of our life is lived in this in-between zone, right, of hard work, a struggle of traveling together through a confusing landscape, wondering whether we can really trust the people who are leading us, doubtful that our resources will last and get us there. Laura told the kids a few of her travel stories. I remember a camping trip our family took when I was maybe 5 or 6. I was so excited about this trip. I thought, you know, it's only a few hours to get there, but I thought we'd never get there. We finally pulled into our campsite. We pulled our car into the space, and our friends had driven with us, and they pulled their brand new shiny station wagon into the spot next to us. And I hopped out of the car when we got there, and I grabbed the first big rock I could find, and I let out a huge whoop as I threw it as high in the air as I possibly could. I was so excited that we had finally arrived. And I watched that rock slowly ascend and reach its apex, and then I watched it come down right in the middle of the hood of our friend's brand new station wagon. Now, I bet that's not the way that my parents had envisioned the beginning of that camping trip, but that's how it started for all of us. I know that you all have your own travel stories where something went terribly wrong. A few of you shared some of those with me. You can ask Nick and Kelly about their attempt to find the courthouse in New York City when they were trying to get their marriage license. According to Kelly, it was a minor snafu that cost them just a few extra minutes, but was no big deal. According to Nick, it was a catastrophic disaster that nearly ended their marriage before it began. It included going the wrong way on the subway, then missing several stops, then wandering aimlessly for hours in the labyrinthine streets of New York City, and finally having to hail a cab out of desperation. Or you might ask Bob and Sally Eccles about the trip their family took to the Grand Canyon. One of their daughters didn't particularly want to make this family trip to the Grand Canyon, And just to prove her point, as kids can, when they finally arrived and got there, she just refused to get out of the car and even look at it. She stayed in the car and wrote a letter to one of her friends about what an incredibly boring trip her family was on. Well, part of the adventure, part of traveling with God's people, is learning that things can and often do go wrong along the way. On Israel's camping trip, lots of different things went wrong. What they thought would be a brief and transitional period between their deliverance, their freedom from Egypt, and their settlement in their own land, that proved a little bit longer than they expected. They wound up spending 40 years camping in the wilderness. And during those 40 years, they were frequently lost. They were constantly worried about having enough food and water. After a while, they came to the conclusion that while Moses might have been good at escaping from Egypt, he wasn't all that helpful in the wilderness. Like most travelers, the people of Israel learned the importance of telling stories. And one of the most frightening stories they tell is this horrifying one we read today about all the snakes. Now look, I'll be honest, I am deathly afraid of snakes. I hate snakes. I'm sure some of you are on my team here. I think I already told you this, but when I was running the trails in Gunn Park last year, just at the beginning of the trail, I saw this fat copperhead coiled up right in the middle of the trail. I was lucky to see it. I saw it about 10 feet before I got to it. It was the exact same color as the trail. So I'm not even sure how I spotted it, but I did. I threw rocks at it until finally this thing slithered off into the grass, and I thought, okay, the way's clear, I'm going to run. So I started to run down the hill, but as I ran down the hill, every tree root looked like a copperhead to me, and I started to hyperventilate, and I turned around and sprinted as fast as I could out of the trails and ran that day on the streets. Now, imagine hundreds of copperheads sent by God to punish you. That is like the worst nightmare you could imagine. Now, because Israel complained in the wilderness, God punished them, we're told in this story, by sending swarms of poisonous snakes. And so the people cry out to Moses, okay, we're sorry for complaining, we'll stop. We know we were wrong. So Moses just prayed to God and asked God to stop it with the poisonous snakes. Now, this seems like a fairly straightforward, honest, and reasonable request to me. But God says, no, the poisonous snakes stay. But here's what I will do. I'll have Moses make this bronze serpent, put it on top of a pole, and I'll tell him to raise it up so that when you do get bitten by the poisonous snakes that I'll continue to send, you can look at the bronze snake on the pole and be healed. Does that feel like about how some of your prayers get answered? Not quite what you had in mind? The snake story has lots of different layers. The Pharaoh in Egypt, the land from which Israel had just been delivered, one of the symbols of the Pharaoh was a snake. A snake in many ancient Near Eastern cultures represented the power, the wiliness of the gods. It's one layer of the story. Lots of their neighbors had forms of religious life that were oriented around snakes, so it's odd that God would direct their attention to a snake. There's another layer to the story a little bit later in the Hebrew Bible. It's in 2 Kings 4, if you want to look at it later. King Hezekiah is a good king, a noble king. He's trying to get rid of all the idols in Israel's life, and so he starts smashing altars and idols that they've built. And guess what? One of the idols he had to smash that was being kept in the temple, a bronze serpent. So something that God had meant for Israel as a gift of healing had become for them a magic idol that had to be destroyed. And then yet another layer is our gospel story. Jesus refers to the terrifying snake story in John's gospel where he says, quote, "And just as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, so the Son of Man must be lifted up, that whoever believes in him may have eternal life." Now that's interesting. So the whole strange poisonous snake story is here condensed by Jesus into a singular symbol of healing. Jesus hears it as a story about the way God heals us, like the bronze snake lifted by Moses. So the Son of Man will be lifted up and crucified, and all who look to him and put their trust in him and in his way of life will find healing. Israel's 40 years in the wilderness, wandering around, this story invites us to imagine our life with God as a pilgrimage with other people. To be part of God's people just is to set out on a journey towards a new place and to do it with a group of friends. You don't have to do it by yourself. Now, we use the word adventure, and that sounds like it could be fun, but you know as well as I do that anytime you take a trip, something will go wrong. Your wagon will lose a wheel. Someone will misread a map. You'll run out of gas in the middle of nowhere, or worse yet, you'll run out of snacks. Someone will get diarrhea. Do not laugh about this. One of my good friends has an absolutely harrowing tale involving a long car trip on which he first met his girlfriend's parents, and he was, let me just say, plagued with gastrointestinal trouble, and I am going to leave it there, my friends. Now, being on this journey as God's people and doing it with friends, that of course will not protect you from wounds, but it will connect you with the God of healing. And that's why we go. The poisonous snakes were Israel's punishment for complaining. So we've talked a little bit about complaining this morning. It was part of our confession of sin. And the season of Lent is a pretty good time to articulate as best we can our complaints. Don't tell me you don't have them. You do, and so do I. We all have them. Those deep protests about the way life has turned out for us. Those inner voices that never tire of pointing out that this isn't exactly the life we wanted. But we're all taught to be good boys and girls, right? And good boys and girls avoid grumbling and avoid complaining. And if you grew up religious and in church and were told to read scripture, there are even specific verses that tell you to shut up, to stuff a sock in it. Don't grumble. Don't complain. The problem with trying to be the kind of person who doesn't complain is that this tactic, don't complain, usually just gives to our complaints a new life of their own underground. They lie buried as a garden of resentment and anger that start to color everything else we do in life. And this can happen even if, technically speaking, we never complain out loud. When we bottle up our complaints, when we box them up, shove them down into a drawer, what happens is that we ruin our ability to pray because we're training ourselves in that way to become dishonest. There are actually, when you read Numbers or in the wilderness, there are 5 stories of Israel's complaints. There's the first 4, and then the one we read today is the 5th. It's the big complaint story. And the difference in these complaint stories is when you get to the one we read, in all the ones before, Israel just complained against Moses. Moses, you're terrible at this. You're not good leading it. But did you notice that in the story we read today, they complained both against Moses and against God? They finally said what they really needed to say. They said to God, "Why did you bring us up out of Egypt, only to die here in the wilderness?" Sometimes the best praying we can do is to give full voice to our anger, to our frustration, to our confusion, and to our exhaustion. Now, this might seem odd to you, but perhaps one of the most faithful things we can do today is to begin to get some of our frustrations in at least a rough draft form. We might want to criticize wandering Israel for all their groaning and moaning and arguing, but at least they began to live with a certain level of honesty and candor in the way they prayed. That's more than some of us can say. Full strength, full bore, honest complaint against God might be what some of us need to learn today in the middle of the season of Lent. As a form of prayer, it can feel like a great accomplishment, actually, to haul up all this frustration and anger and resentment and negativity, to haul it all up to the surface of our lives so that we can dump it out in front of ourselves and see it for what it is and own it and take responsibility for it. It's hard to ever experience real freedom, deliverance, and healing from God if we never take responsibility from our various complaints, some of them obvious, some of them hidden. So I'm encouraging you this morning to complain, in part because complaining is one form of storytelling. Now, it's not a very good form of storytelling. It's kind of like the kindergarten level of storytelling, but at least when you're complaining, you're learning to tell a story about your life. I hope that you get a better one later, but at least it's a start. And friends, I want to remind you today that you are part of a storytelling tradition. For Jesus, these terrifying, poisonous snake stories became stories of God's healing in our lives. The early Christians who organized John's gospel, they weren't interested in this snake story being literally true in some sort of journalistic sense, as if we were supposed to take it word for word. They wanted to pass along a story to us as followers of Jesus that can gather significance over time like a snowball. Stories of God's deliverance and healing in Israel now expand and deepen in the life of Jesus the Christ. And now for us, these gospel stories of Christ's terrible crucifixion can become a glorious expression of God's amazing love for us. What was a horror for Jesus, his being lifted up, becomes a story of deliverance and healing for pilgrims like us. So I want to ask us, how are we doing as a storytelling community? Are the stories of the Bible filling our imaginations? Are they providing us with inspiration and hope for living well together? Do these stories that we tell, do they express our hope and our confidence in God's promises to bless us and heal us in Jesus Christ? And how do they color the other stories we tell, the political stories that we tell, the stories about the economy, stories about our community and our place, the stories we tell about poverty and drug use and mental health, our stories about ourselves and our families, our neighbors and our friends? And what about the stories we tell about our congregation and its mission and its future? Are those stories infused with hope that comes from Jesus' way of telling stories? Friends, if we let ourselves be pulled into other kinds of stories, stories about success or strength or comfort or ease or status or revenge, the snakes will eat us alive. There are much better stories. The biggest truth about our lives is that in Jesus Christ, God has delivered us from all that threatens us. And in Jesus Christ, God is slowly healing us so that we can begin to enjoy our newfound freedom together. These are sturdy stories, strong stories that will get you through a whole lifetime of all kinds of challenges and ups and downs. These are stories so large and spacious, they can even provide us room to complain if that's what we need at the moment. So friends, we've already been delivered from slavery. Let's don't look back. Let's move forward together in the freedom that God has promised us. We're not out of the woods yet. There are still 3 weeks in this Lenten season. So let's keep going and keep sharing our stories together along the way. Amen.